Convergence of Newspaper Election Coverage, 1992 to 2000, by Alexander Halliway, University at Buffalo. This is a chapter that will appear in the forthcoming volume by Philip Napoli called Media, Diversity, and Localism. The problem of measuring and reporting the convergence of media content seems to be easily lost in a sea of gray. Despite efforts of activists, media producers, and regulators to describe it in black and white. The need for such metrics is clear. Without some way of demonstrating a problem, and an indication of whether current regulation is affecting that problem, it is impossible to craft good policy. Healthy democracy requires that the population reach consensus through informed discussion of the issues. It has long been realized that a monolithic view of the outside world does not foster an atmosphere of deliberation. It is therefore vital that we understand the degree to which the media are meeting these democratic needs by providing a multifaceted view of the world that corresponds to the variety of values and cultures in the society. The only thing we can know with certainty is that the media are neither absolutely monolithic, nor are they presenting the broadest range of facts and opinions possible. In practice, they're somewhere between these extremes. The question of how many perspectives are enough is one that is very difficult on which to agree. The work presented in this chapter aims to answer a slightly different question. How is the breadth of content changing over time? Convergence of industry and of content. As a whole, media industries are changing. When it comes to the mass media, publishing of books, and newspapers, film, television, and radio, there is ample evidence that a smaller and smaller number of companies produce a growing proportion of information available to the public. Although new network media were once considered a possible antidote to this process, particularly when it comes to the news media, large corporations remain the dominant source of news online as well as off. Many argue that despite such convergence of ownership, it is not reasonable to infer that the content is growing increasingly similar, that large conglomerates must still be responsive to niche audiences, and therefore produce a broad variety of content. Such arguments tend to be built on anecdote and conjecture. Attempts that have been made, for example, to discover broader empirical evidence of a relationship between source diversity and ownership have been unsuccessful. There are other factors that potentially influence the creation of news and entertainment content. Greater diversity among those who produce the news, for example, might produce a greater variety of perspectives. Naturally, this is particularly true of editorial content, which more readily bears the mark of its maker. However, hard news is also influenced by the values and processes of the newsroom and the reporter. A news organization that embraces the diversity of its staff, many argue, may produce news that is diversely framed, although this relationship also remains unclear. In other chapters in this volume, you find arguments which suggest that some of the best ways of measuring convergence and localism are through the structures of ownership, the makeup of the newsroom, the policies of news organizations, or the distribution of entertainment and news formats. Although these all may provide some indication of diversity and local interests within media institutions, they do not speak directly to content. Ben Bagdikian, for example, connects ownership to content in a variety of ways, mostly focusing on the tendency of large conglomerates to concentrate on the bottom line and relying on anecdotal evidence of corporate tampering with news coverage, backroom deals, and courting advertisers. Bagdikian's critics have suggested that such evidence is inconclusive, that the cases he cites are anomalous, and that the economic motive of a conglomerate, although it may disrupt fair coverage of public events in particular instances, leads to generally less biased news than does independent ownership. Some continue to see corporate ownership of media in the context of the propaganda model. The corporate media aims to bend public opinion in support of its own interests. A softer model of media effects goes hand in hand with a softer model of the effects of corporate ownership. Such an approach suggests that biases always exist in the production of news, and that the exigencies of corporate ownership, the culture from which the journalist observes, the structure of news production, and the nature of the medium itself all affect the content that is conveyed. They do this by presenting observed facts in news frames and by acting as gatekeepers, selecting what news is important enough to be observed and conveyed to an audience. Given that what is of particular interest is the effect on media content, it is perhaps surprising that more has not been done to demonstrate the diversity of content available. Although it is possible to establish connections between ownership and content, establishing a snapshot of content as a whole is more challenging. An ideal measure would provide a clear indication of the degree to which media cover and frame the widest range of possible issues. Unfortunately, this often requires significant interpretation by the analyst or time-consuming analysis of content by human coders. Presented later is a metric that provides some indication of how one mass medium, large circulation newspapers, may be changing over time. Given that most of the work addressed in this volume is related to the broadcast industries and the new network media, the choice of newspapers may seem anachronistic. Newspapers have traditionally been considered to be at the heart of informing the public and held out to be a beacon of localism. Nonetheless, the total number of newspapers has fallen precipitously over the last several decades, just as the number of chain-owned papers has increased. With relaxed ownership rules, newspapers have become the target of larger media conglomerates. In some ways, newspapers may be the bellwether for diversity within the larger media environment. Ever since newspapers came to be a mass medium, they have served a dual role. The ability to quickly print and distribute similar news to a geographically dispersed populace helped to bind together a national culture. At the same time, the national culture thrives not only when there is the possibility of discussing more geographically local concerns and concerns of community of interest. By carefully measuring how a number of large newspapers have changed in their coverage over an 8-year period, we're able to better observe whether that balance has changed, and with it, the role of newspapers. Determining differences in content. The media famously tell us not what to think, but what to think about. Those topics that are placed prominently in the media come to be viewed as the most salient areas of concern by audiences. Likewise, choices of particular words, phrases, and themes to make sense of or frame a particular story tend, once again, to influence what an audience considers important in their own environment. In studying the effects of agenda setting and framing, researchers often compare the presence of news items or particular perspectives in a story with the attitudes held by the audience. Generally, analysis of the content in these cases has been limited to determining topic categories or key phrases and terms, and counting the appearance of these terms within the coverage. Other research examines coverage of a particular topic to determine whether reporting has cast an issue or candidate in a positive or negative light. Gillens and Hertzman examined the coverage of the 1996 Telecommunications Act to determine whether those newspapers owned by conglomerates that would benefit from the legislation covered the story differently than those that were independently owned. As part of Domke et al.'s research on the 1996 election coverage, attitudes toward candidates in newspaper content were coded. Both examples relied on a determination of whether there was bias presented in the manifest content of the newspapers that could cast an issue or candidate in a negative or positive light. There are several ways we might attempt to measure the breadth of coverage. We could, for example, gather information about events and decide how well newspapers have covered these events. Generally, this means examining the coverage of newspapers in comparison with one another, because an objective measure of the events without relying on the work of newspapers would be very difficult. By recording all the events covered by newspapers and then looking for which of these events are covered by any given newspaper, it would be possible to judge how well newspapers are doing in comparison with one another. To determine the events or stories being covered would require a great deal of interpretive work. Although we could conceivably create a coding schema that would link coverage to particular events, this makes for a process that allows for some degree of subjective judgment on the part of the coders. Better than classifying the events or topics being covered would be to somehow allow these topics to emerge from the texts. That is, if we had some kind of fingerprint of a text that indicated the amount of space given text devoted to a number of issues and how they were being described, we would be able to compare these fingerprints to determine the similarity among newspapers. Fingerprinting documents has been the chief problem of information science for the last few decades. Although it is possible to simply establish keywords and search for them, it is more valuable to know which words are particularly important to a document, which terms clearly differentiate one article or book from another. Although there are a number of ways in which this is done, one of the earliest and simplest was to compare the appearance of terms or counts of number of terms that appeared in each document. Individual words or pairs of words are often used as the distinguishing features. Letters are too common across documents. The letter E would appear with similar frequency in any two texts of sufficient size in the same language. And identical sentences are unlikely to appear in two documents. Words, however, tend to be shared among some, but not all, documents, providing some basis for comparison. There's a long history of using word frequencies to determine authorship. Researchers have computed various frequency scores, stylometrics, to help determine the author of The Imitation of Christ, The Federalist Papers, and Hamlet. More recently, these approaches have been improved on to allow for the identification of email and other electronic communications. Using word frequencies alone to determine the similarity between two texts has been criticized as too inexact, and more sophisticated approaches have since been developed to help cluster documents and find similarities. In particular, relying on frequency information fails to account for the semantic structure of a text. It treats dog bites man and man bites dog as identical expressions. Although there remain criticisms of stylistic fingerprinting, there are indications that it can be an effective way of determining the number, if not identity, of authors. Because the aim here is to identify the perspectives taken, this appears to be a reasonable approach. In pairwise comparisons of each of the newspapers considered later, the degree to which the texts of the two collections of articles are dissimilar is presented. This approach can compare the texts of newspapers, showing, for example, that the Washington Post and the New York Times tend to be more similar to one another than either is to the San Francisco Chronicle. However, even this is of limited value alone. We can think of any number of reasons that a newspaper in the western part of the country would have different kinds of coverage than one on the east coast. But by looking at how these differences vary over time, we are provided with some evidence of whether newspaper content is converging across newspapers. Presidential coverage. To investigate whether large circulation newspapers are converging in content, some subset of articles needs to be observed over a long period. Although maintaining multiple perspectives in any form of news or entertainment content is valuable, perhaps the area in which such diversity is most vital is in the coverage of political campaigns. For this reason, newspaper articles that address the presidential campaigns of 1992, 1996, and 2000 were analyzed to see whether the nature of coverage changed during this 8-year period. An initial set of 8 newspapers was selected for analysis. Those with the highest circulations available in full text on LexisNexis for the years 1992 to 2000. Articles were retrieved that contained the surnames of both the Republican and Democratic Party candidates for president somewhere in the full text, and appeared from May through the end of October of each election year. These newspapers include the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, with 2,786 total articles for all 3 years, the Boston Globe, 3,248 articles, the Chicago Sun-Times, 2,458 articles, the Houston Chronicle, 2,941 articles, the New York Times, 6,006 articles, the San Francisco Chronicle, 1,459 articles, the USA Today, 3,071 articles, and the Washington Post, 5,158 articles. Stories that included content attributed to wire services were excluded, and news articles were separated from those that were clearly indicated as being editorials, letters, or opinion pieces. The totality of the news texts of these articles, stripped of headlines and bylines, was compared across newspapers for each of the 3 years studied. The comparison was accomplished by contrasting the appearance of words within the two texts such that a numeric measurement of dissimilarity, the inverse cosine similarity of raw word vectors, see Manning and Schutz, 1999, was computed, ranging from 1 for collections of word frequencies that were entirely dissimilar, or orthogonal, to 0 for two texts with identical distributions of words. Because of the large size of the texts, most of these appear to be very similar. In many information retrieval tasks, cosine similarity is used in tandem with a method of weighting terms that are out of the ordinary. Given that the aim is to measure the degree of uniqueness rather than seek out unique identifying terms, the terms have not been weighted. As a result, similarity among the texts is very high, but we remain able to discern changes in that similarity over time. Convergence of coverage. The results of the analysis are complicated. First, to see whether newspapers are converging towards the mean, the texts of the news articles in each newspaper are compared to the texts of the news articles in all newspapers. If we look at the average distance from the mean, even excluding USA Today, the breadth of coverage shrinks significantly from 1992 to 1996, and widens very slightly from 1996 to 2000. USA Today is very much an outlier in this process, existing far outside the norm in 1992, and quickly converging towards the mainstream, a reflection of the newspaper's editorial strategy bringing it from its McPaper origins to the proximity of America's prestige press. This overall view, however, misses some important differences among newspapers. Figure 5.1 charts the changes over the 8-year period. Three of the newspapers, the New York Times, Washington Post, and the USA Today, each move significantly toward the mean. The other papers exhibit changes from year to year in both directions. In other words, the papers that might be considered more nationally oriented start out closer to the mean and tend to converge toward that mean during the period under consideration. This pattern is largely repeated among the editorials of the newspapers under consideration, figure 5.2. The breadth of content is greater across the board for editorial content, as we might expect. However, the changes observed in the relationships among newspapers are repeated. The major national newspapers tend to come together when it comes to the contents of their editorials. Figures 5.1 and 5.2 do not tell the whole story. Because the approach compares each newspaper to the mean of all newspapers, changes in one affect every other measurement. Also, although it may appear, for example, that the Houston Chronicle and the San Francisco Chronicle are similar in content, this is not the case. In fact, they are merely of similar distance from the mean. To better account for the multiple dimensions, distances may be compared pairwise between each of the newspapers. When looking at the differences in all dimensions for all newspapers, in all dimensions for news stories in 2000, table 5.1, for example, it is clear that the least similar newspapers were the San Francisco Chronicle and the Chicago Sun-Times. We are left with a clear, if contradictory, picture. Although the de facto national newspapers in the United States have similar content, and that content appears to be growing more similar over time, large newspapers with somewhat more local circulations remain relatively unusual in terms of their content. This powerful quantitative abstraction demonstrates the usefulness of such a measure, but it does leave us with a question. How are they different? Or, to put it another way, what are the differences in content that made a difference? Why they are different. As noted earlier, one of the ways the approach taken here has been used in the past is as a way of detecting authorship. The frequency differences among newspapers may be the result of any number of systematic biases. It may have to do, for example, with the regional differences in dialect, or perhaps it is the result of selection of news of local relevance or other values inherent to the local context. Or it may reflect a difference of agendas or a focus on different issues. The raw measure of difference raises the question of the sources of these differences, of the source of these differences. A complete answer to these questions would require a careful and thorough reading of the newspapers in question to determine the possible biases in framing an agenda. We may be able to provide some initial direction, however, some indication of what appear to be the most influential differences in the coverage. Because what we are measuring is the differences between the frequencies of words, one approach would be to compare some frequencies among particularly salient terms, the words Bush and Gore in the 2000 election, for example. Such comparisons of particular word frequencies are often used to infer differences in meaning, but are constrained by what the researcher feels are the most telling differences. rather than framing the question through the use of an a priori set of terms, we might instead make note of those terms that are most different between the two sets of articles. For example, when comparing the Chicago Sun-Times articles to those in the San Francisco Chronicle during 2000, a number of terms show up as being significantly more frequent in each. The San Francisco Chronicle uses California, Latino, percent, voters, male, San Francisco, state, nader, yesterday, and will far more often, whereas the Chicago Sun-Times uses Clinton, Gore, Washington, Bush, defense, and was more often. Some of the reasons for the differences in frequency are obvious. We would expect, for example, a newspaper in California to use that state's name with more frequency. Other terms, like the difference in frequency between was and will, require better contextualization to explain. One way to see how these words are being used is to list them within their original context. Unfortunately, given the number of articles under consideration, any such listing would be nearly as difficult to interpret as the original articles. Another possibility is to score each sentence in the articles and determine which of these sentences contains the highest mean difference among its words. For example, given the high difference terms listed earlier, the sentence reading, "Vice President Al Gore will make his 68th visit to California beginning today, a two-day trip for a series of campaign events and a flurry of political fundraisers in Southern California," garners an especially high score. Given that the San Francisco Chronicle seems to be an example of the more localized papers in this study, and the Washington Post appears to be particularly close to the mean and representative of the national newspapers, the top 200 sentences were taken from the former that most clearly differentiated the two newspapers. Because the algorithm used to parse out sentences was unsophisticated, several sentence fragments had to be excluded by hand. Most of the remaining sentences were brief and would require yet further context to understand what impact they have. See the following, for example. Their bats thawed. 2. It is Russian for underwater boat or submarine. 3. Hey, at least the pants man isn't out stealing flowers. Many of the sentences included polling data. Some of this may be an artifact of the approach, because numbers are likely to be unique, although the high comparative frequency of the word percent suggests this isn't the only factor. 1. Green Party candidate Ralph Nader was favored 5%, while Reform Party candidate Pat Buchanan had 2%. 2. On Proposition 38, the school vouchers initiative, likely voters are still overwhelmingly against, 55-36%, with 9% still undecided. 3. California women are backing Gore over Bush, 54%-34%, while the Republicans' lead among men has fallen 2 percentage points, 44%-42%. A large number clearly have to do with campaigning visits to the state of California, or with issues related to the strategic position of California in the national election. Quote, 1. Quote, "The big mistake we made in 1996 was giving up California," unquote, McCain told the California delegates. 2. "California voters won't be able to make their own decision on which side has the better case." 3. Quote, "Gray Davis is Al Gore's go-to guy in California," unquote, Miller said. 4. Quote, "The race in California is a race we can win," unquote, said Jerry Parsky, who co-chairs the Bush campaign in California. 5. Quote, "You don't have the big left-wing population like you have on either coast," unquote. Note that the last quotation is from an article on campaigning in the Midwest states, but the quote picked clearly frames the issue in comparison to California. Ralph Nader and third parties figure prominently in comparison with the Washington Post. 1. No one doubts consumer activist Ralph Nader will beat out Jello Biafra this weekend for the Green Party's presidential nomination. 2. Nader's overall image rating is more negative than positive, with 29% viewing him favorably, 43% unfavorably. 3. Quote, "Bush is not going to win, so what should you do with your vote? Why don't you build a new conservative third party? Make your vote count," unquote. Finally, there are a number of phrases that suggest local issues and concerns. 1. Cheney supports drilling in the Arctic wildlife area, but opposes drilling off California coast. 2. Issues are the key to victory in California for Democrat Al Gore, but if personality takes center stage, that's good news for Republican George W. Bush, according to a field poll released yesterday. 3. They accuse Democrats of pushing the other immigration measures purely as a political ploy to cast them as anti-Latino in an election year when their presidential candidate, Texas Governor George W. Bush, is reaching out to Latino voters. 4. Two-term Republican Jim Rogan probably would be the Democrats' top target in California, even if it wasn't for the revenge factor. If we were to begin to identify some of the features that help to explain the convergence, we can see in general terms among national newspapers, we would see that an absence of news that is of concern at the state level is part of the difference. Equally important are the kinds of items a given newspaper thinks are important, and the kinds of sources they feel are worthy of seeking. In some cases, this may mean closely following polls or press releases. Perhaps the clearest reason for differences among newspaper coverage can be attributed to the quotations that newspapers gather. Nearly half the sentences that make a difference in this case contained quotations from sources. One of the ways journalists construct a frame is by selecting quotations that provide perspectives on the news, and many have decried the shrinking number and quality of sources used by the mass media. Not surprisingly, diverse content seems to reflect the inclusion of diverse voices in a very literal sense. Toward policy. Due to the selection process, the only co-owned newspapers in the sample were the Boston Globe and the New York Times, although almost all are held by media conglomerates. Hearst, owners of the Houston Chronicle, acquired the San Francisco Chronicle after a hard-fought court battle at the very tail end of the period studied here. It is therefore unfortunately difficult to demonstrate using these newspapers whether there is a strong correlation between co-ownership and convergence. The convergence in the Boston Globe and New York Times was consistently similar, but there was no significant change in the similarity over the 8-year period. What these data can provide is evidence that there is a decreasing diversity among newspapers with the greatest national reach, whereas large local newspapers appear to maintain their local character. The approach taken here represents a clear metric of whether and to what degree newspapers are becoming more similar. If the ultimate aim of ownership policy is to maintain a healthy information environment, one that provides for a diversity of ideas and perspectives, it makes sense to measure this as proximally as possible, that is, to measure the content. Naturally, such quantitative measures need not and should not be used to the exclusion of more interpretive approaches. However, they may provide a way to gauge content over time and prove to be one more way to ensure the continued diversity of our newspapers, as well as, with some adaptation, television and radio content. They also provide a mapping or structure through which the most fruitful sources of differences among coverage may be identified. It is clear from the earlier exploration, for example, the degree to which the selection of sources colors the nature of a newspaper's coverage. One of the advantages to the approach described here is that it is amenable to automation. With some work and increasingly available electronic sources of texts, it may be possible to construct a kind of ongoing news weather report, an indication from week to week of the homogeneity of the news environment national or global publics are receiving. Although no replacement for interpretive work, such a content barometer would provide a metric that would help us gauge the quality and diversity of our news environment. And that is the end of the chapter. Sans tables, figures, and references, of course. Please don't, obviously, I guess, quote the voice version of this. Go and get the book. There's some very interesting articles there. See it in all of its original glory. Or gory, either way. Thanks very much.